Colonel Warburton, Reel 9. I'd like to ask you about how you got on with the higher formations. You mentioned already you were attached to 49th Division, 49th. I think. And the CRA, the Commander of Royal Artillery of that, I don't know. How did you get on? What was the nature of your relationship with 49th Div and the CRA?
We all seem to get on very well with the higher formations. There's no doubt that the SP regiments do command a certain amount of respect from the gunner quarters.
Why do you think that is?
Normally they're of RSA standards, and they all endeavour to keep that standard up, which is a very high standard grade of men and of officers and men.
How about the CRAs themselves? I mean, what was your personal relationship with them? It sounds as if it's quite good.
Oh, yes, my relationship with the whole succession of CRAs was always good.
Was it important to establish a good relationship with it?
I think this is most important, because you need all the support you can possibly have as a TA regiment. And I found them very helpful.
Did you go on exercises with 49th Div? Or
yes, we had one very big exercise. I can't remember what it was on a force of plane. Well, it was all over the south. You know, it was a very big, it was almost an army operation. I can't remember what it was called, but it was very, 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 very testing.
Was that a mobilisation of the whole division for that?
Yes,
the whole, and it was all territorial, was it?
The whole territorial division. And it went on for 2 days and 2 nights. And it was very exhausting and very valuable.
In what way?
Gave the people who hadn't been in the war some experience of the sort of life he led during wartime.
And anything else about the training with 49th Div?
For part of that exercise, we were most of the senior officers were upgraded as part of the training. They assumed that the CRA had been killed and the next step was taken on. And that happened right through. So it's, my second in command to the regiment, and I acted as CRA for one day.
How did you find that? The responsibility.
Well, it was all bewildering to begin with. You know, something to find yourself with two or three regiments.
How did you cope?
I think I must have coped adequately, because it wasn't chaotic or anything like that.
Anything else about, you know, the year, as the years went by? Because at some point in either 1955 or 1956, you seem to have lost the self-propelled guns. There was a change. Do you recall that?
That was after me, wasn't it?
I don't...
1960, wasn't it?
No, well, it seems to imply in the notes that it was in 1955 or 56, but... You don't remember it being anything other.
No, I don't, and I can't think why.
As far as you were concerned, it was always self-propelled guns.
Yes, I was self-propelled. I was self-propelled. I decided.
Any other stories that would indicate what sort, you know, the sort of duties you had?
Well, other than the normal responsibilities of a CEO of a regiment, I don't think there were anything with us. We always had problems. We were all short-staffed in the officer's mess when we went to camp. And we all seemed to have far worse food than anybody else in camp. And it was so, it got so bad that we decided to have case courses for ourselves. And at that time I was using a rather large hotel's telephone for lunch, and I took some of their staff up to look after us, and we had a wonderful time. Eating time then. you don't remember the Grand Hotel in Sheffield? No.
Now, in January 1957, the regiment was affiliated to the 1st Regiment, Royal Horse Artillery.
Yes.
Could you talk a little about the nature of that link?
In theory, the idea was that we would get our permanent staff from the 1st RHA. And we did, in fact, get our adjutants from them. And several RSMs came from that.
Was it a successful link?
A very successful link. And we were very pleased to have it, particularly as the 1st RHA had a lot of men from the Nottingham area in their regiment. And we found it a most useful link for anybody from our regiment wanting to get into the regular army, had a good chance of getting into the 1st RHA.
Was there any other side of the link other than they provided permanent staff? I mean, did you provide recruits?
Yes.
Through? I mean, was that a big thing to recruit?
Yes, exactly. This was a two-way service, really.
Would you train with them at all?
At that stage, no. But I think that came later, I guess, when the detection was over.
Now, another thing is, in 1958, there was the preparations for the Jubilee Parade on the 22nd of June. This was in your last year. But
it
was
in London.
Yes, it seems to, and it rained. That seems to have been the notes we've got seem to say that was a lot of the effort in the first half of the year was put into preparing for that. What do you remember of the preparations for the Jubilee Parade? Was it an important thing?
It was a very important item in our program. And we only sent a detachment. I can't remember how many men were sent. We sent quite a large detachment to London, to Marstown.
Did you go?
And I went there, but not to take part in the parade. I was part of the crowd, seeing the march pass, which was extremely impressive. But one of the difficulties with this march pass was that the column was so long that they had several bands playing, and frequently the bands overlapped with the step, and they found it really difficult to keep in step.
Was it raining?
On top of which it was pouring with rain. I went watching it in my blues, standing with somebody with a brightly coloured umbrella, sharing it with them. And that's all I remember about that. I never gave the officers to my club for a snack and a glass of champagne to celebrate. But that's all. And then I went home. But it was a vast affair, and there were a very large number of troops on parade.
And then there was another Jubilee parade in Nottingham on the 14th of September when the Duke of Portland came and took the salute. Do you recall that as well?
Was that commanding there?
Just another month or so.
Was that the day the Queen came to Nottingham?
I don't know. It just says the Duke of Portland was there. You don't remember that one?
But I can remember the Duke of Portland being at some parade somewhere, because I know he only just got onto the saluting base when the people arrived. He'd been held up somewhere, and that was on the Shepherd's Lane, the name of this place.
It's where the Goose Fair is, anyway.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it says he only arrived back from Scotland half an hour ago, so that will be... Well, this sort of parade's important to you. The ceremonial parades, were they important for recruitment?
They were extremely important to show the regiment in the city of Nottingham. We had the freedom of the city of Nottingham. And I thought it was very important that we should be seen as often as we could in the city.
What was the general relationship between the regiment and the city, the public? I mean, was there an appreciation, you think?
I feel that by the support that we always had from the council and the police authority and all the official organisations, that we were held in high regard.
And what about the general public?
It's difficult to say, really. Nobody ever threw anything. We never got involved with any demonstrations or anything like that.
Did you ever have any disciplinary problems with people, not misbehaving at camp or not turning up at camp or various things like that?
We were very, very short of troublemakers. And most of the things were done more in fun than any other thing. There was a regimental custom that developed while I was when we were at Ottawa camp. On the middle Sunday morning, at breakfast time, in front of where I sit in the officer's mess for breakfast, was a statue's head appeared. Much to my surprise. And shortly after breakfast, the police arrived to ask if they had seen anything of a stone carving that had been reported missing. And I have to admit that it was in our possession. And that I received it was returned to its rightful owner before lunch. And honor was done all round. And this formality happened for the next two camps at Ottawa. It's the same thing, the same condition that it had to be returned before lunch on the same day. It doesn't happen now, I don't think.
How did you get on with the men? You're a colonel. Did you have much contact yourself as the men?
Yes, I always tried to keep close to the men, and I think they had a certain respect for me.
Now, anything else before we come to the end of your period as colonel? I know you've still got other links. We've got more to do, but any other stories from the period when you were actually in command?
There must be dozens. We used to have an annual officer's ball.
Tell me about that.
Which was a great success and was held at the home of Julian Ball, actually, Lamb Close. But one year...
What were they like? What were they like, the officers' boards? Just describe a typical one.
They were typical officers' boards. They were well attended. And they used to have an excellent band. From Harriet, Conrad Tate, and this went on for 3 or 4 years, until 3 and 4 died. And that year, out of respect, we cancelled the ball. We did not cancel the ball, we moved the ball to Annesley Hall, the home of Colonel George Washington. But this did not deter Conrad Tate, who brought his band from Harrogate and arrived at Lamb Close to play, quite forgetting that he'd be told to go to Annesley Park. However, he was soon redirected and all was well.
I wondered whether you could comment on the overall role of the TA and the question of the Russian menace, as it was seen then, and also about the Cold War generally during your period of command then, not so much now, but then. How did you feel about the Soviet menace, the Russian Cold War, this sort of thing?
Really feel very much involved in either of these things. Although the Russian Cold War was on, it didn't really affect us in the least, as far as I remember. And we certainly didn't envisage being called upon to help in any way. Although we did come to the rescue, there was some stage when there was an issue or something, that wasn't. A bustling time for old people. I don't know what it was about, I don't remember it.
So, you didn't focus your activities against the Soviet threat, or feel that you were going to be at any moment thrown into a war, a state of war?
See, Russia had been our allies for years. Okay. We didn't envisage that. I'm sure we didn't.
And that was your personal opinion as well?
Yes, likely.
You didn't see the Soviet Union as an enemy?
No.
Or a direct enemy?
No, not really. No, it's all been our awkward. It's very difficult, you know.
Well, did any people warn that war could be imminent during those mid-50s?
I did meet some, but I mean, I've no doubt there were people who thought that.
But you never felt that you were going to be called into action?
I never felt unsafe or anything like that, but I'm sure.
What about the whole question of nuclear thing and civil defence? Was that in your mind at all?
Very much so. Especially late on, we were well aware of the horrors of nuclear thing, and we were also equally aware that we will have a possibility of getting that sort of equipment to fire in guns.
Nuclear shells?
Yes, and we were aware of the almost frightening power of these things. And we did a certain amount of drills, as you might call it, on the when these things go off, radioactive materials and that sort of thing.
What kind of drills were these?
Well, we used to have really vague now, but we were warned about all the possible things and
Did you have any protective clothing issued? Or?
We didn't have any issues, but we had some. There was some alarm. There was something there. We had a demonstration kit or something. But it was clear that any future war was going to be very unpleasant.
What about a civil defence role? I know they got that in the 60s, but in the 50s, was there any question of you having a civil defence role, either of control of the local population or things like that?
We were aware of the civil defence. As far as I remember, we didn't get very involved with them. I don't remember getting involved with them.
Now, why did you stand down in 1958, or what happened?
Well, I'd already done more than my stint. Normal period was only 2 or 3 years, and I think I did 5. And I did that because it was considered at that time that Colonel Vaughan Harder hadn't had quite the experience needed at that time. And the further 2 years would be beneficial. And that was the decision of the CRA. And in due course, after 5 years, he was appointed Commander Regiment, and I was made Deputy CRA.
Now, how did you feel about the succession by Foreman Hardy? Were you happy with the choice?
Yeah, I was quite happy about it, because I had recruited him myself with that intention. And he had all the right credentials, including a distinguished war record. And that was good enough for me.
And what about, how did you feel about leaving the regiment?
I was very sad to leave the regiment after my command, and I had thoroughly enjoyed it. And I like to think that the regiment was in better order when I left it than when I took it over.
Now, you carried on as Deputy CRA. Now, what did that involve?
It involved very little, if the truth be known, but I did visit the other regiments in the brigade, in the artillery brigade, that is, with their camps. And frankly, it was about all. I mean, it didn't do very much as a deputy, shall we? And I did call into the headquarters of the, at that time, Old Derby Road, headquarters for the CRA.
Was that the old drill hall?
The old drill hall. I did call in regularly into there. It was just across the road from the TA Association, which I continued to serve on, the TA Association.
How long were you deputy CRA?
I think it was a 2 year appointment.
So that's one thing. Now, what about your continued role with the Territorial Association?
Well, my role, I was a member of the TA Association until about 3 years ago. It was a hell of a long time.
And, well, you've talked about what it did, in the 50s, but how did its role develop over the next 30 years?
Well, my role.
Well, your role and the Territorial Association's role.
So the Territorial Association, when I first attended, was it 1953, I suppose, when it was a county organisation, with its own county secretary, and every quarter there was a district meeting which all the counties attended. And this went on until, now I can't remember when, until eventually the county committees county associations were disbanded and became county committees as part of an East Region TA Association, which included the counties of Nottinghamshire, Lincolnshire, Derbyshire, Leicestershire, and Northampton. Which used to meet in Nottingham every quarter, and at which the senior members of the county committees used to attend. And this organisation has gone on ever since.
And did its role develop? You know, I mean, originally, as you've talked about what it was like in the 50s, but has it changed its role?
Well, its role has not changed, but of course, when the county had its own secretary and everything, there were four regiments commanded by half colonels in the county. And at the present time, when the change of the organisation of the TA took place, this was very considerably reduced, and the four regiments became four batches or companies or whatever you like. They were just done like that. And thereafter, they couldn't justify a county secretary being paid as a county secretary. They had one area secretary to cover the whole lot.